meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We have a busy night ahead of us. We're going to cover what's been happening with the Natalie Holloway investigation. As you know, Joran van der Sloot has crawled out from under his rock again, and the media is all over it. Greta Van Susteren, new confessions, then lies, and I have lots to cover, lots of interesting guests, and I thought I would get one of the best in the business to come on tonight to talk about that interview that Joran gave. Dr. Clint Van Zandt is here. Of course, he's a former FBI agent, author, security expert. Clint, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dana. Good to be with you.
Before we get into Joran van der Sloot, we have some breaking news on the Breonna Dennison murder, and I thought I'd check with you on that. What's going on?
Yeah, as you recall, last year, this young co-ed, 19-year-old girl from Reno, Nevada, but going to college in California, was home in Reno visiting with some friends. They went out one night and then came back. She was sleeping on a couch. I talk about this from firsthand because I was out at the crime scene, both where she was kidnapped and where the body was disposed of. I went to both scenes. It was a residential area where college students live, Dana, where they live in regular, houses they just rent. And unfortunately, when she slept that night, she slept on a couch, and it was a couch that you could stand outside across the street, see into the front door, and see the couch, and obviously see the victim where she was sleeping. Now, this is the same neighborhood where 1 month prior to Breonna being kidnapped, there was another woman who was knocked to the ground, kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and then escaped from her assailant. DNA evidence was gathered at that time. Then Breonna Dennison came up missing. She was carried away this particular night. DNA evidence was found in the apartment that linked an unknown male who had put his hand on a door, linked him to the sexual assault of the woman a month previous. And then the investigation went on for a month to find Breonna. She was finally found miles away in a open, breeze-swept field in Nevada. Her body was deteriorating, decomposing. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled. And again, Dana, interesting case was that DNA evidence was found on her body that linked her back to not only the male DNA that was found on the door of the house she slept in that night, but also linked back again to this first offender and to yet one other sexual assault.
Yep.
When the authorities rolled her body over to take it away, they found two pair of women's panties, one that was kind of infamous here in the States that had a picture of the Pink Panther on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the authorities, cable television was all over that trying to identify it. And on those panties, they found the same DNA of this unidentified male. So that caused this gigantic manhunt trying to find who the offender was. Well, within the last couple of weeks, someone called in on the tip line, identified a 27-year-old local man who was a pipe fitter who worked in the area of the college. He had lived with a woman. He had a 5-year-old child by this woman. Police went out and interviewed him. And then it's like you and I going out and talking to somebody. When you see the guy put his head down and he shakes his head, he won't make eye contact. They explained why they were there. He refused to provide DNA, which obviously could have excluded him. Then the police did, the next logical thing. They identified his girlfriend. They found out that the two of them had a child together. They got the mother's permission to get DNA from the child, and they used that swab, obviously half, which was the father's DNA. They used that cheek swab of the baby to compare back to the biological father, and they were able to link that back to the sexual assault and murder of Breonna Dennison and the sexual assault of two other women in the Reno, Nevada area. That guy's in jail now, thank God.
And you have to wonder how many more are going to be tied into this character.
Well, I think that's the case, too. I mean, this guy didn't just fall off of a turnip truck at age 27. And we know that, even though he was living with this woman, she said there were nights, especially around the town, Brianna was kidnapped and murdered, and the other woman was sexually assaulted. This woman that the killer lived with said, well, there were nights, you know, days he would be gone. And then shortly after Brianna's body was found, he moved out to Washington State and lived out there for about 7 or 8 months. So now, of course, it's going to be up to the FBI, VICAP, and the local and state authorities to try to determine what other crimes, probably rapes, sexual assaults, and murders that might have a similar MO and, of course, might have DNA evidence available to see if they can match up to this offender, too.
Yeah, and I bet there'll be lots. Let's switch gears. You're in Vandersloot. You have an excellent article on MSNBC.com. Jorn Vandersloot, I sold Natalie into slavery for $10,000. I'm going to change that. I sold Natalie's story to Fox News for $10,000. I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. But
No, you're right. I mean, you know, you and I are part of the media. You know, I do, you know, a lot of television. And I'm just ashamed of cable television. I'm ashamed. You know, I know Greta. And, if she was sitting here with you and I would say, Greta, I'm ashamed that you're paying money. And she'd go, wait, we didn't pay money. We simply licensed some photographs, or we licensed the tape recording. Well, that's TV talk for saying we paid a guy to come on television. And you're Jorn Vandersloot, the predatorial liar, sexual predator, and pathological liar that he is. He found a new way to scam somebody for money. In this case, he scammed Fox TV. He let it be known to Greta and her network that, hey, I can really tell you what happened. In actuality, I talked to some guy the night that Natalie disappeared. He was looking for a young white girl to sell into slavery in Venezuela. We made a deal. I took Natalie down the beach. He drove the boat up on the beach. I turned Natalie over. She made a few sounds. He carried her away. He gave me a bag with $10,000. No, really didn't have $10,000 ahead. $9,800. He skimmed a couple of $100 for himself, probably from ad money or something.
Yep.
Then he took Natalie away. Now, I told the two Cowpole brothers, says Jorn Vandersloot. I told my father. I told a lawyer. Two cops found out about it in Aruba, and my father paid them $50,000 hush money. And then a year or two later, the guy I sold Natalie to, I don't really know who he is, but all of a sudden, he wires me another $10,000 hush money.
Yeah.
Well, you know, cable television eats this story up. And you sit there, Dana, and you watch his body language being interviewed, and his head goes to the wrong side, and his eyes go, and you go, man, your lips are moving, you're lying, and it's just a shame to give that guy, just like O.J. Simpson, to give him another 15 minutes of fame and let him make a fool of television, of the media, and to take the money and run. And, you know, what's he going to do? Of course, the next day he turns around and says, really, I made it all up again. Can you imagine the Aruban courts? I mean, this guy has been secretly recorded once where he says he was responsible for Natalie's death, a second time where he was trying to sell women in Thailand into prostitution, and now confessing to having sold Natalie for $10,000. I mean, this guy wouldn't know the truth if it hit him like a freight train, which wouldn't be a bad idea in his case.
Yeah, for sure. Clint Van Zandt's here, and we're talking about the recent interview on Fox News, Greta Van Susteren and Jorn Vandersloot. Clint, he made it up as he was going on. In fact, you talked about 10,000 became 9.8, and then a little later on it became 9.6. I sat there, I went crazy, you know, watching the TV thinking, Greta, what are you doing? Here's a guy.
That guy just eats you up like that. You know, even though she rolls her eyes, you know, she can roll her eyebrows as much as she wants to, they stroke the check and put that guy on national or international television, And he sat there and laughed at them all the way to the bank, Dana.
There's a few times, or only one time on probably my time on Earth, that I'm going to agree with Attorney Joe Tacopina. Greta blew it this time. Here you have this evidence, and I this is my big concern. 6 months she sits on it. She says that, well, the election was on and we had other things to do.
What a bunch of BS. Isn't that a bunch of... I mean, when you hear someone in the media start to tell you why they didn't take information that could have been critical for a criminal investigation and instead of giving it to the police, held on to it so they could raise their ratings. I mean, she's a lawyer. Shame on her. Shame on her for doing that.
When you look at Vandersloot, Clint... And this last interview was scripted, staged. He planned it. He sucked them in for 10 grand. But let's go back to the DeVries hidden camera, where he's rolling along in the truck. He's smoking a little pot. He's talking, a mile a minute. And you and I both know that in any confession, in any interview, we're going to get little bits of the truth here and there, bits here, bits there. I think that if there is a possibility of Joran Vandersloot telling any sort of truth, he did it in that vehicle in the DeVries undercover interview.
And I think you're right, too. I don't think there's any doubt for most people who have followed this case that, you know, no matter how many suspects have been arrested, how many people have been looked at, how many people have had, been investigated, it still comes back to Joran Vandersloot and the two Calpo brothers. They were the last ones with her. Vandersloot allegedly was the last one on the beach with her. And whatever scenario you can develop for her death, I mean, in my case, you know, I had this, as you say, I write this blog for MSNBC.com,
yep.
And it's also on Newsvine.com. I had someone who wrote to me today and said, you know, why are you picking on Vandersloot, basically? You know, isn't Natalie responsible for herself? Quit giving her a pass just because, you know, she's a pretty American girl. No, I'm not giving her a pass. She had been drinking that day. She should have known better than to go with three basic strangers out in the car at 1 a.m. at night. So, you know, she's got a responsibility for that. But the bottom line is those three guys who took her, who took advantage of her, and I'll go to my grave until I find out otherwise, thinking she had drank to excess, Dana.
Yeah.
And then I think they probably slipped her Rufinol, a date rape drug, where she couldn't actually 100% refuse whatever they were asking of her. The three of them kind of got her outside, got her in their car. I think they took her out someplace with the idea that, as police have told me, these men or men like them had done in the past of taking young women, giving them a date rape drug, sexually assaulting them, and then if they went to the police the next day, the cops would say, well, you know, this could take a while to investigate, and I know your plane is going back to America tomorrow, so you may want to just count yourself lucky and get on the plane. I mean, this was a hunting ground for sexual predators, and I think Natalie was just going to be one more score. I think between the booze that she herself had willingly ingested, I think, and the date rape drug, and perhaps the physical assault that she may have underwent, or her attempt to fight off her attackers, I think, as you've indicated in his tape recording in Holland, where he rattles on and on in that car, he suggests that she passed out. I think that could have been the case.
Yep.
I think she could have passed out because of all those chemicals in her system and her resisting. And I think that you could have had Vandersloot and or the Calpo brothers or somebody else helping them panic and say, wow, we got to get rid of this body. Well, how do you get rid of a body when you're on an island?
You know, I think of the family, Clint, and you know Beth Holloway, Dave, and you have to wonder, you know, all of a sudden 6 months later, Fox pulls this boner, and all of a sudden this crazy crap starts. But there is a bigger picture. There is a human trafficking issue going on. Vandersloot's full of crap, but there is a human trafficking thing going on. And if there was any indication of a United States citizen being sold in Aruba, I'm sure the State Department, FBI, everyone involved would be on that like a bird on a bug. This just is so disgusting.
You know, you're right. A couple of years ago, Dr. Phil offered the theory up that Natalie had been sold into sexual slavery, and I was on his show. Beth Holloway, Twitty, Natalie Baum, and I were both on Dr. Phil together. And as we're sitting in the green room waiting to go on, I said, Beth, Dr. Phil's going to advance this theory that Natalie was sold into sexual slavery. And I said, please don't buy into it. I said, you know, the FBI, the CIA, other agencies have already checked this out overseas. There's nothing to it. We've not been able to substantiate it. And, you know, Beth turned to me and she said, well, Clint, you got to have hope.
Yep.
I said, Beth, you can have hope, but you shouldn't have false hope. And I think that's what, you know, in his own way, Dr. Phil unfortunately created. I think that's what Greta's creating. Now, if all of this nonsense helps to draw, as you're suggesting, attention to the tens of thousands of innocent international men, women, and children, young girls and boys that are kidnapped, sold, or tricked into sexual bondage and slavery, so be it. There should be some good, because that is the world's lousy, dirty secret, is how many people are sucked into that and become victims of that horrible underground trade in human life and misery on a daily basis. But is there an open market that's snatching pretty young blonde girls? I don't care if they're blonde or black or blue or yellow or green. It doesn't make any difference. But is there, you know, is something like that happening when people are going on vacation like that every day, high-profile victims? No. It's the rank and file, you know, lower class, poor economically, poor, challenged person that's getting sucked up in that, that's being forced into slavery, forced into prostitution, forced into muling drugs across the country and across the world. Those are the victims that, you know, that aren't being accounted for, that somehow the world needs to try to find a way to rescue.
You know, I've interviewed you and other criminal profilers on this program, and if you were to have your criminal profiling 101 class and you showed Joran van der Sloot these interviews that he has given, or he has, you know, he's ran the interviews himself. He's staged them, he's ran them, and he's taken the host and squished them up in his hand and just kind of played them like a marionette puppet. How do you profile someone like Joran van der Sloot?
Yeah, I think, you know, number one, the guy is a pathological liar. Number two, he is, depending what you want to call him, a psychopath, a sociopath, an antisocial personality. Those are terms used loosely by either the psychological community, the legal community, or the criminal, or either lawyers or, you know, those of us current or former in law enforcement. He's someone that cannot appreciate the pain and suffering that another human being goes through. He is the sun, and we are the moon and stars as far as he's concerned. We circle around him. The only thing that counts is what he wants, his own instant gratification, and again, that he feels no compunction to take care of another human being, to care about the suffering. People are there to serve him, and if they don't work, they're disposable, which is the way I think he saw Natalie Holloway.
Absolutely. Clint Van Zandt, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And you know what absolutely drives me around the bend, and we're going to cover it more tonight. We've got lots of information, lots of news on the Holloway case, and people very close to the investigation. And I'm going to bring on another police officer who will talk about this so-called interview. I'm going to bring on Art Wood next, as a former Secret Service agent, Holloway investigator. He's going to talk about, he mentioned to me earlier on today about, you know, it's Thanksgiving tomorrow in the United States. What a slap in the face for the Holloway family to see this two-bit garbage interview on the Van Susteren Show. Criticize me if you want. That was low ball, low class. You sit on something for 6 months. You don't get a hold of the authorities. You try and do what you can because you think this is going to be a big thing, a big ratings grab, and you pay a piece of crap like that. You pay a piece of crap like that, license, something to him for 10 grand or 5 grand, or he's not worth a cent. I don't know. It just absolutely drives me around the bend when something like this happens. And what I thought I'd do tonight is bring on the experts to talk about that interview. He made it up as he went along. He contradicted himself many times. The body language was unbelievable, okay? It was absolutely unbelievable. And I say, criticize me if you want, shame on Greta Van Susteren and Fox News for even going down that path, because it was wrong, it was unprofessional, it does nothing to help solve this case. If she's really, truly wanting to do something to help with this case, and I believe she has in the past, this isn't the way to do it, in my opinion. In fact, it's set it back more than it's done it any good. We're going to take a break. We're going to be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Art Wood, former Secret Service agent, friend of the Holloways, and investigator into the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, will join me. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. You all know Art Wood is a former Secret Service agent, investigator, someone close to the Holloway investigation and close to the family, and I thought I'd bring him on tonight to talk about the recent developments into the case of disappearance of Natalie Holloway, and most recently this gutter can interview with Greta Van Susteren and Joran van der Sloot. That just makes me sick, and I'm going to just keep going on and on. Hi, Art.
Hi, Dana.
You saw the interview with Joran and Greta. I'm ashamed of her and Fox News. That's my opinion. I'm really curious about yours.
Well, you know, I used to have a lot more respect for Fox News. They're getting to be like the Jerry Springer Show now.
Yep.
I'm very disgusted. I mean, 3 days before Thanksgiving, and this family has to deal with this this narcissistic punk talking about selling their daughter into slavery.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was only intended to cover up the truth anyway.
And it's been 6 months, apparently, since they've done the interview. They did nothing as far as sending it to law enforcement or to an investigative agency because they knew that, you know, there was nothing to it, in my opinion. And then they'll use the term licensed art, but you and I both know that they paid that piece of crap to come on and spew all this garbage. He just made it up as he went along.
Oh, it was obvious that this punk had run out of money, and he calls Fox News to get thousands of dollars for a story that doesn't even begin to hold water.
You know, I mean, you're close.
I mean, he used them, and they're using us by putting this goofball on television.
It's a ratings grab, is all it is. Have you spoken to Dave or Beth since this happened?
Well, I talked to Dave before the show aired. He was very much aware that it was coming. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he watched it.
No.
He didn't have a taste for it. He was very disappointed. Quite frankly, I want to tell you, I want your listeners to understand one thing. Dave Holloway knew that this show was going to be aired because Greta got his feedback on it before she aired the show. He wasn't happy about it. And you know what he told her? He said, Greta, if you could pay this guy thousands of dollars, I'll be more than happy to go on your show and respond if you help us drain the pond in Aruba. In other words, if you could pay me enough money to drain the pond in Aruba, then I'll be more than happy to go on your show.
Yep.
But, of course, you know, that's not the kind of ratings that they're looking for. They want the sensationalism of putting that narcissistic punk piece of crap on television.
You know, Art, you're former Secret Service, law enforcement. All of a sudden, you get something like this. 6 months ago, Greta uses the excuse that there was an election and she was busy. That's bullshit, okay? You can bleep that out later. And then she doesn't do anything with it. Even if there was a scintilla of evidence in it, because you can't believe van der Sloot, why didn't she send it to the FBI, to State Department, to whoever? Because all of a sudden, this guy's bragging about selling a United States citizen into slavery. And even though there's no truth to that, in my opinion, he's disposed of her allegedly in other ways. You know, Fox News is accountable, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, it just shows how far they've sunk. There was nothing newsworthy about the show. Nothing whatsoever.
You were so close to the investigation, Art. You've seen the interviews with Vandersloot. You saw the Peter R. DeVries undercover footage of him, Vandersloot, in the vehicle, smoking a marijuana, talking away. He wasn't getting paid for that one. I think if there's any truth, if that guy is capable of telling it, he told it in that vehicle about how he disposed of Natalie. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I believe that what he told his so-called friend Patrick was absolutely a confession. I mean, there was no, excuse me, Dan, there's no doubt in my mind that he knew that he was telling the truth. And the only part that he didn't tell the truth about was he wouldn't name the person that helped him get rid of the body.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe that was his father. And, you know, there's not anybody out there that gives an interview or a witness statement that doesn't have some truth in it. And I think there's some truth in what he told Greta when she flew to Asia, and that truth is that his father paid off some police officers in Aruba.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's well-known adage to any law enforcement officer who's sat down and taken a confession from someone. There's always bits and pieces of truth in there.
Absolutely. I've never taken a statement from somebody that was totally false.
Yeah, and he's done that, but it's just it's the other part that drives me crazy. And let's go back, Art, to that surveillance video, photo, whatever you want to call it, in the casino with Natalie and that guy that sure looked like Paulus Vandersloot sitting beside her. I talked about that 3 years ago on this program. Nobody's been able to identify it, but I'll go to my grave saying that was Paulus Vandersloot sitting there.
Well, it certainly could have been. And if it was, they did a really good job of covering it up. Even Jossie Mansour, he said it was without a doubt Paulus Vandersloot sitting there.
And you know, and here we are again, over 3 years later. The prosecutor Moss, who in my opinion is a disgrace, has done nothing with any of this. Yeah, justice is served many ways, Art. You know that. I've told Beth Holloway and Dave that they may not get justice in a court of law, but ultimately the maker will have justice for Mr. Vandersloot. But can't this case go to trial? I think there's enough.
Oh, I feel that, listen, in this country, this case would have gone to trial.
Yeah.
There's enough evidence to convict this kid. There's no question. Whether they could convict him of murder or not, I don't know. But I do know that they can convict him of a crime. He's out walking the streets. Now he's trying to recruit prostitutes for Holland and in Thailand. And he's a Dutch prince. That's why he seems to think he's untouchable. I think he's about burning up his last good wish, though, and somebody, somewhere, is going to get even.
So as an investigator into this case, as a family friend, I hate to put you on the spot like this, but your thoughts on the Van Susteren-Joran interview, do you see any credence in it at all, besides maybe the odd little thing that Joran said?
There's no credence in my mind. I mean, I investigated the case thoroughly. We vetted about every situation that we could even fathom. And this interview was designed to just further cloud the issue of what he told Patrick when he gave that confession. It's just designed to cloud it, to come up with another scenario that he could say he lied every time.
Yep. And in
That's
fact,
all this was about.
In fact, if this does go to court, I think this interview will cause more harm than it will do good.
Well, you know, show me somebody in Aruba that's willing to do something with this case. I haven't seen a thing out of the prosecutor.
Yeah.
You know, he's got an eyewitness. He's got tapes of Joran admitting to helping dispose of a body.
Yep.
Let's go. Let's go to court. Let a jury decide.
Yeah, and there's other independent witnesses that are saying that he was seen in the area. He was seen disposing of the body. He was seen doing all sorts of things. And it's just it's just so disgusting that this is going on the way it is right now. I'll give you the last word, Art.
Well, you know, all I can say is, you know, it's supposed to be a time of Thanksgiving, and the only thing I can say is that we need to be thankful that our laws in our country and in Canada protect the citizens a heck of a lot better than they do in some other countries, and people need to be aware of that.
Yeah, and justice for Natalie, that's for sure.
And, oh, man, I would love to see justice for Natalie.
Thank you, Art. You're always welcome here.
Well, thank you, Dana.
Okay, take care,
my
friend.
Thanks for having me, and happy Thanksgiving to all your listeners.
Okay, thank you, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
That's Art Wood, former Secret Service agent, investigator, and he has a house full of grandkids tonight celebrating Thanksgiving. And to you and yours and my audience that celebrate Thanksgiving in the United States of America, happy Thanksgiving to you. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with police officer and author Stacey Dietrich to analyze more of this Vandersloot Van Susteren interview. I'm sorry, but it just rubs me the wrong way. We'll be right back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. We're going to analyze the bejesus out of this interview of Joran Vandersloot. I know he doesn't like it when we say Vandersloot, but I don't care. And Greta Van Susteren, I'm disgusted. I think, and I hope, and I pray that there'll be justice for Natalie Holloway someday. I'm not trying to rhyme or be silly. This is a case that I've covered many, 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 many times on this program. But I'm just disgusted with Greta Van Susteren and Fox News and the pimping that they did of the show and paying licensing Mr. Vandersloot for his made-up interview. Stacey Dietrich is a police officer. She's an author of The Devil's Closet, as seen on CNN. You can go to her webpage at www.staceydietrich.com. She's a host of Justice Interrupted. She's one of my angels. And she's always welcome on this program. And I want to get, we've had FBI, Clint Van Zandt. We've had Secret Service, Art Wood, and now we're going to have just plain old regular law enforcement come on and talk about and analyze this interview. Hi, Stacey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. You know, I've had the feds come on to talk about it. We all thought that it was low ball, low class. Vandersloot made it up as he went along. It was very easy to pick up facial expressions, body language, contradictions. It was really easy. In fact, interviewing 101, you could see that this guy was full of crap. Your thoughts?
The same. Actually, the minute, I think 30 seconds into the interview, when she said, "Now, you contacted us," that was all I needed to hear.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, that was it. Anytime the fact that he is contacting her and offering this wealth of information, that alone did it for me. And it was interesting what she said about the body language, because I had actually gone through the kinesic interviewing years and years and years ago, and we had watched the Bill Clinton interview on Monica Lewinsky. And I rewatched the interview again last night and started watching him, and you know, the you know, it's they go with the motto, "The truth is in the heart," type thing. And boy, he was textbook for that. I think they're going to be showing that interview in police academies all over the world.
Oh, of course. And, you know, you don't even have to be a forensic interviewer just to sit down and watch the body language. And you know, the part that I felt so disgusted over, not just the fact that it's a, you know, it's a family holiday, Thanksgiving, I know the family, and to see them, they didn't know what was going on, to see them have to watch this clown, and I hope they didn't, although I understand Beth did go to New York and Greta did show her this, to see this and to have it thrown in their face that he's saying that Natalie still might be alive. They know. They know very well that this is just garbage. And when we talk forensic interviewing and we talk body language, for the layperson that's out there listening, Stacey, what do we mean by that?
They're physiological responses to deception and non-deception. And actually, in the kinesic interviewing that I was talking about, you know, the truth is in the heart. There were parts of his story that I believe were very true.
Oh yeah, I do too.
You know, and he's mixing them with this concoction that he came up with, And, you know, when he's talking about being at the hotel and going to the beach and all these, what I believe to be factual occurrences, if you watch it, he's clearly, he's cocking his head and chin upwards to the left each time. And when he starts to factor in the bogus stuff, the I put her on the boat, I noticed one time he was very dramatic when he did it, about her getting on the boat and saying, what's going on, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's cocking his head up to the right. He's back and forth from one side to the other. And then at one point, you know, several times throughout the story, he's dead-eye locked on her. And here's the thing that kind of, you know, and I give her the, you know, she's a journalist.
Yep.
You know, she's not law enforcement, and so I understand. But he completely controlled that interview.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
it was, you know, he was clearly in control of that. He, you know, he was saying what he wanted to say. I think she could have been a little rougher on him. There were a couple of things that I thought, ooh, now she's going to hammer him on, and she didn't. Specifically, you know, and this is a minor thing, the business card. He said, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know how to get a hold of him. In the next breath, he says, yeah, I got a hold of him because he gave me a business card.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, now she's going to say, where is that card? Do you have it? What did you do with it? What name was on the card? Just little things like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the interview itself was edited. I guess that's besides the point. But I agree with you totally, and we've talked about this all evening, that when you do take a statement from someone, usually a cautionary or a warrant statement, that there's always a little bit of truth in it. You know, there's nuggets here, nuggets there. And I think he did tell the truth about some things. This whole human
things that were actually, I believe, factually established. Those were things that he can't retract. If, you know, he's on the surveillance tape. Those are things that he can't not say happened. And I've always believed that the truth came out when he wasn't aware he was being videotaped.
Yep, and that's the undercover. We'll get to that in a little bit, the Peter DeVries undercover tape. If you're just joining us, Stacy Dittrich is here. She's a police officer, author, and we're talking about this interview with Greta Van Susteren and Joran van der Sloot. I use the analogy that, you know, the old puppeteer where they pull the strings on the puppet. That's Joran, and Greta is the one dancing underneath. Now, I'm going to get criticized for that because there's a lot of Greta fans out there, and that's okay because she has done great work with this, but she's been used twice by this guy now. And as she's actually a trial lawyer, although I'm not sure when the last time she's actually been in court as a defense lawyer, but the softball questions and the contradictions that he would throw out were just so blatantly obvious, Stacey, that, you know, I wanted to just rip him right through the TV because
right.
it was
like,
crazy.
Come on, say it now. But, you know, like I said, she's a journalist, and, you know, keep them talking, and, you know, it's a story. So, you know, I guess they have their methods, you know, in that realm of journalism, as opposed to if you're, you know, in interrogation with this guy as law enforcement, it's totally different. But, yeah, I was chomping at the bit pretty much during that whole thing. And the thing with the undercover tape, you know, and Robin Sachs brought up a very good point when we discussed this. I had said, you know, I think on that tape you saw him take maybe two hits of the marijuana cigarette, and the Aruban government is claiming, well, he was under the influence of narcotic hallucinogens or whatever. Marijuana is not a hallucinogen, for one.
No, right.
And I have obtained many, many confessions where the suspect had admittedly smoked marijuana like prior to. It was held up in court, no problem. And it's like Robin said, it's not on the burden of the prosecution to determine that his confession won't fly, it was under the influence. It's the defense.
Yep.
So for the prosecution to make that determination and say, well, we can't prosecute him, he's under the influence, that's not their say to make. They've got enough, they've got a confession right there. I believe it was extremely truthful. Because a guy like that, you know, it's amazing to watch this young kid play everybody. And
yeah.
That's exactly what he's doing. I mean, this is not a stupid kid. but, you know, he's not Albert Einstein. And what he's doing, walking around, playing these experts and these officials and these intelligent people with knowledge, and he's playing them, and he's winning. It's amazing. It's like a little OJ.
Yeah, that's for sure. Give me 15 minutes in a room alone with him. But let's go to interviewing. Now, again, Greta Van Susteren is a TV host. She's not law enforcement. Some of the criticism that's come forward is that, what the hell was she doing? She even sat on this interview for 6 months. Why didn't she send it to law enforcement? Why didn't she follow it up instead of waiting till now? She says she was busy with politics. That's BS. This was strictly a ratings grab. I do think that, honestly, she wants to try and get answers the same as the rest of us, but it's that cable TV mantra that has sucked her in. But, you know, Stacey, when we sit down and we're going to interview someone, we're going to interrogate someone to see if they'll confess to stealing a car or breaking into a house or, you know, even a homicide, and I've done it and you've done it, you get into their personal space. You try to bond with them, in fact. You try to, the old days of slamming phone books and bright lights, that doesn't happen anymore. You even try to rationalize what they've done, even though you don't believe it. But, you know, just going over the way that she did it, is there was no way in hell that kid was going to say anything that was, you know, he got paid, whether it was $5,000, $10,000, or a buck. It was just so disgusting.
Well, I wasn't aware that it had occurred 6 months ago until his attorney came on, which I can't say much for the guy's demeanor and or personality, and I'll leave it at that. But to an extent, I saw where he was coming from a little bit.
Yep.
I didn't know this was 6 months ago, and I would think that something this detrimental or this impactive to the investigation would have been immediately turned over to law enforcement. And so I was kind of a little dumbfounded myself at that point. But again, as soon as I heard him, talk about the sex slave trade, it was so obvious. And I think it was so obvious to any prudent person that has common sense that this is coming on the tails of his tape that he got caught with. And, there was speculation that the father, when confronted with these transcripts, he didn't deny it. You know, that means something. He didn't admit it, but he didn't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
You're shoving these transcripts in this guy's face. It's regarding his son. If that were me, I would be like, I'm not saying anything. Let me go look at him. Call my kid first and find out what the hell is going on.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I did it or I didn't do it. And as far as these tapes, I think his father is just as dirty as he is, and it wouldn't surprise me that they set that up.
Oh, yeah, there's, there was surveillance video from 3 years ago that made it look like, and I'll go to my grave saying that it sure looked like Paulus Vandersloot sitting in a casino
with them the last night.
Yeah.
They took no steps, I believe, to identify who that man was.
Well, yeah, and that's as crazy. It's the whole justice system over there, and a little later on I'm going to be interviewing the person who was actually a spokesman for the Aruban government while this was going on, to see now 3 years later, and that he's not the spokesman for Aruba anymore, what he has to say. But that's that big picture. But it's the whole media thing, and Stacey, we're going to finish up here in a minute, but you're thrust into the media now, both as an author, as a commentator, as an analyst, as a host, and you see these high-profile cases, and Holloway is a big one, and will be a big one for a long time, and you see how Fox is handling it, and other shows are handling it, and you have to wonder, is there a fine line to reporting things like this, to actually verifying your facts before you bring them on, or just, we're going to get ratings, so let's run it anyway.
We've had a couple, media personalities on our show before of how the media affects the crime. And, it's all of the networks. And you look at the Kaylee Anthony case, I think they're very detrimental sometimes. They can be helpful in a small handful, but for the most part, I think it's very detrimental in a lot of these investigations where they get turned into this circus-like atmosphere. You get characters and, I'm sorry, idiots like Leonard Padilla down there, you know, cowboy toting around, you know, looking for a body that he wouldn't know what to do with if he found it anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just makes a mess of things. It makes it very difficult for law enforcement, you know, to conduct their business, to keep things under wraps, away from the suspect, things that they may have the upper hand on. Those things tend to get out. It's very difficult.
Stacy Dietrich, thank you, ma'am.
Thanks, Dana.
We'll talk soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, that's the perspective of a female law enforcement officer, someone who is an expert when it comes to interviewing and interrogation. And, you know, I don't want to harp on this, but I'm going to, because we haven't done a Holloway show in a long time. It's just so sad to see something like this happen the way it is. And I think Art Wood said it best, you know, right at Thanksgiving. Not that there's a right time. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm totally wrong. But it's very disheartening to see what went down and the way it did go down. I sat down this afternoon with Steve Cohen. You'll remember Steve Cohen as the spokesperson for Aruba at the beginning of the Natalie Holloway investigation. He took a lot of heat in the early days. He's no longer the spokesperson for Aruba, but he does have something to say about what's been going on recently. Here's what Steve had to say. All right, we're back, and in our continuing coverage of the disappearance of Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway and the most recent events, well, you all saw the interview with Joran Vandersloot and Greta Van Susteren the other night. I thought I would bring back Steve Cohen. Steve, you'll remember as the spokesperson for Aruba. He was quite prevalent in the news media in the early days of the investigation and on. He's no longer their spokesperson, but I thought I'd bring him on to talk about this a little bit tonight. Hi, sir. How are you?
Hi, Dana. Good to be with you.
You know, this story is, what, over 3 years old now. You were part of it, I should say, as a spokesperson. You've gone the route as far as interviews go. I really appreciate you spending some time with us tonight. Let's just get right at it. You saw the interview, I'm sure, with Joran and Greta Van Susteren. Here we are again. Your thoughts?
Well, I have a few. I want to start sort of at the fundamental place for myself. I always believed, even from the very beginning in 2005, that the only person who knew what actually happened to Natalie was Joran, mm-hmm. and that any responsibility would directly flow through him. I still believe that. I also know that the fellow's a sociopath. By that I mean, by the standard definition, that he cares about himself and no one else. He has a difficulty separating truth from fiction. And I thought the tale he told Greta in the most recent interview about there being a slave trader of some sort, you know, was just a remarkable tale. The problem is, it could have been plausible in 2005. I mean, I know that there were a number of investigations by the early teams, including the FBI, looking at a variety of places where Natalie might have been spirited to. So it's the hard part is there's some veracity to what he might be saying, but it's almost impossible to check. Plus, if you put that up against his history as being a pathological liar, you sort of don't know where to go. And I think that's the problem that the prosecution continues to be faced with.
Well, you and I both know you're a media guy. You've been involved in, you know, the business for a long, long time. When you see stories like this, there's always little nuggets of truth. There's a bit of truth here, a bit of truth there. But when you get someone like Vandersloot who lies all the time, I want to go back to the Peter DeVries undercover investigation where Joran is tooling along in a vehicle and he's talking, bragging, he's a little bit high about having Natalie on the beach and then disposing of her body. Let's compare the two. Let's compare. Greta likes to use the term license. I use the term pay for an interview where the cameras are on and Joran is doing what he likes to do best, bragging about himself, compared to he's a little bit high and he's in a truck. He doesn't know that he's being recorded. Yeah, he's still bragging, but I think there was more truth than that one. Let's talk about that.
I agree with you 100% on that. I think that the truthfulness of the DeVries interview seemed a lot closer to at least what my theory has been about the case all along. I think the nature of that entrapment, the way that he was entrapped by someone who he thought was a confidant, allows me to feel that there's more credence to that interview. And that this other interview that Van Susteren came up with seems to me to be more of what I'd just call a bargain was struck. I don't know the actual nature of it. My guess is there was some payment for the so-called chip, and that they then felt that that was not tantamount to having a paid interview. In any case, I don't think Uren would have showed up unless there was some financial benefit for him, and then he concocted a story that he knew was plausible, might be plausible to anyone who's followed the case. I think the difficulty, though, is if you take either of those interviews and you present them to a prosecutor, not Hans Moos, but anybody else, you would investigate both of those interviews, it seems to me, in an effort to see if there was something there that you could put into your evidence pile to create a case you could take to a judge.
Well, we all have to agree that the follow-ups haven't been happening with Hans Moos in charge, so to speak. But I want to go way back, Steve. The early days of the investigation, the first 48 hours, the first 72, the first week, whatever you want to call it. All of a sudden, the world grabs this story. All eyes are on Aruba. Talks of cover-up and collusion, and it's still continuing with alleged payoffs of police officers and the government and you name it. Aruba's been scarred by this. There's no doubt about that, but it just keeps continuing, and one has to wonder what is being done on their end to try and finally put some conclusion to this or some closure.
Yeah, I'm not totally on the inside track with this, but I do have friends who are still close to the case, and my sense is that it is centered in the hands of one individual who is the prosecutor, and that he has been diligent in trying to get some of this information together. But at the same time, like the former prosecutor Karen Jansen, and before her the Attorney General Cruz, who was in charge of the whole thing in 2005, there's not a robust commitment that you see in, for instance, the American system. And the result of that is that it adds to all of these charges and countercharges. I would say that in my time when I was inside the case, I did not see anything that was evidence of collusion or corruption. You certainly saw confusion, and a fair amount of confusion in those first few days and weeks. But beyond that, and all these other claims and charges that have been made through the years, I'd have to say from my point of view, I couldn't discern any of it.
Well, we talked about collusion, corruption, inexperience is another one. All of a sudden, something hits you in between the eyes, and you're a small island like Aruba, and you don't know what to do with it. That might be part of it, too. But here we are, fast forward 3 years later. Paulus van der Sloot's name has been thrown into the media again. His son is trying to sell him out, or actually did sell him out, or use Greta's term, licensed him. But that doesn't matter. Paulus van der Sloot is described as kind of a simpleton sometimes, and that's probably as accurate as you can get. Hey, we all try to protect our kids, but I saw a picture very early on in the casino of someone sitting beside Natalie, and hell, it looked like Paulus van der Sloot to me. Let's talk about him and what you think he actually knows or doesn't know.
Well, I've of course met with all these people personally, so I have some take on them. I think that Paulus is a simple man. I don't think he is someone who is prone to having a great sense of being conspiratorial, or that he could think up a great conspiracy. But on the other hand, I think he certainly discussed everything that happened with his son. He probably discussed what happened with him within the first 24 hours, that they all were involved in some sort of discussion about the way they would present themselves during the interrogation. I would include the Calpos in this as well.
Right.
So it seems to me that he has a lot of knowledge. Now, whether he did anything that was actually improper in terms of the law, I think that's a harder one to figure out. And of course, the Dutch courts have exonerated him from being a suspect or a person of interest totally. So he lives in Aruba as a totally free man with no taint at all, at least in front of the eyes of the judiciary.
Yeah, the judiciary is one thing, the people are another. But you and I both know that it's the judiciary that counts when it comes to finding someone responsible. But here we are now, his son caught on tape, Joran, being involved in soliciting young Thai girls into prostitution. And you have to wonder, with that being released, and I understand the Van Susteren interview was kept back for several months, and the two of them tying in together as far as human trafficking, there is a human trafficking problem, but there's also this human garbage that seems to spew from Joran Vandersloot's mouth, and it's just all lie after lie after lie. What does that do to Aruba?
Well, I think that Aruba is hurt by any association at all with Joran. I mean, I think that's obviously been the difficulty for that island. It's an island that I think the world of, and its people, and this sociopath who's lived there and did this evil deed has really hurt the island. I think, though, that what usually runs course with folks who have his psychological syndrome, that they eventually wind up, because of their narcissistic need,
yep,
being caught in their lies, and at some point, whether it is prosecution for Natalie or prosecution for something else, they almost always wind up where they need to wind up, which is under care or incarcerated.
Joran Vandersloot has told several different stories, a couple of them to Greta Van Susteren. The criticism, and I've thrown some out towards her and some other media, is that A, they are not law enforcement, and B, is what they're doing now simply for ratings, or do they have a real desire to try and get a case solved? The Aruban authorities seem to have dropped the ball several times, again, whether it's collusion, corruption, or just plain inexperience. But we've had Dutch authorities investigate it, Steve, and now there's talk of, and whether it's true or not, and I don't believe it, but if a United States citizen was sold to someone, this strange man with this bag of cash, it sounds like something right out of a dime store novel, can't the U.S. government do something, State Department, FBI, whoever, when their own citizens are being sold?
Well, they can, but there has to be some sort of corroborating evidence that's going to lead them on a specific trail. In the early days of the investigation, as I said at the beginning of the interview, the FBI was absolutely involved out of their Miami office with a number of agents exactly tracking down whether Natalie had been taken into any of the white slave trade groups. Venezuela was one that was covered, as was a number of other Central America. Mexico was also looked at. I remember vividly hearing those discussions about how the FBI was not overwhelmed but was trying to track it down. Aruban investigators were also assigned to travel to those areas. So it's not to say that they covered everything, but they did aggressively approach those areas. Now, I think the FBI would be very interested in this Joran interview if they thought there was any shred of evidence that it could be corroborated. And I think the problem is, and Greta would admit this, she didn't do anything in the months after the interview to verify, to put any reasonable due diligence of the truth or falsity of anything he said. She just held it. I don't know why she held it until November, and then she decided to run it in November. She says it was because of the election. Well, I'll take her at her word. There's also this thing called the November sweeps, which are important to television stations and networks. And, you know, perhaps she thought that she'd have more information by November before she would show it. But as far as I can tell, there was no checking on any fact. Instead, all they did was blip things that they thought they couldn't confirm or that would get them into jeopardy in terms of libel or slander.
The excuse of the election, and I heard that too, is weak. There's one thing that I will agree, and only one thing that I will agree with Attorney Joe Tacopina, and I don't agree with him on anything, is that, you know, Greta, you had this, you sat on it. Why didn't you give it to the authorities? Why didn't you do something with it rather than sit on it? And I think that makes her look bad. I just got a couple more minutes with you, and if you're just tuning in, folks, Steve Cohen is here. You'll know Steve is the former Aruban spokesperson. We're talking Natalie Holloway. The family, Beth, Dave, I've interviewed them all, Jug, you see the hurt in their face. You see, and both of them told me many times that they'd move mountains to try and find their child. Now, all of a sudden, 3 years later, they're getting this crazy stuff that she may still be alive. And I believe I heard Beth, and I'm not speaking for her or trying to quote her, saying that she still doesn't believe her daughter is alive and is kind of like you and I, Steve, that if you want to get something truthful from your end, look at that undercover video. That's probably as close as what we're going to get. Your thoughts on the family of Natalie Holloway?
Well, I think that you have your finger on it, that their supposition is what ours is. I think is that Urien was with her. She either became comatose when he was with her, or he somehow harmed her, and then her body was then taken away by Urien and perhaps someone else that we still have not revealed. In any case, that Natalie is not still alive. I think the trauma to this family has been extraordinary. I don't know how they've been able to bear it. I've said repeatedly in interviews over the last 3 years that everything that they did was valid because they were trying to find their daughter. I don't think that this second interview with Urien helps them in terms of a solution. I think what helps them is that the prosecutor bring together all evidence that he has and take this thing to a judge and hope that a judge will see some charge that could be brought against Urien that could be sustained in an Aruban court.
Yeah, I have to agree 100%. Steve Cohen, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana.
Take
Always
care.
Good to talk to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Aruban spokesperson, or former Aruban spokesperson, Steve Cohen. And, Steve took a lot of heat earlier on, but you can see where he is thinking now and what he's saying as far as involvement. We all know that Joran Vandersloot and the Kelpo brothers were the ones last seen with Natalie, and you can go from there. I don't care if you call it licensing or paying for. Joran Vandersloot is a liar. He's a complete freaking liar. And in my opinion, Greta Van Susteren was driven down the primrose path. I could be wrong. We shall see. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back. And what I'd like to do for the last few minutes of the program, about 5 to 8 minutes, is sit down and talk to someone very close to the investigation, and someone who was actually there in Aruba, Red from Scared Monkeys, the top banana of the program. Hi, sir. How are you?
Dana, how are you this evening?
I'm kind of crusty.
I hear you. Let me just tell you. Red is over the flu. Red has watched all of this freaking nonsense.
Yep.
Red's a little pissed.
Yeah.
So I may have to censor myself.
Well, that's okay. You know, we'll throw in a beep every so often. But, yeah, you know, and we've done this before. You and I have covered this. You've covered it more than I have. We've had all the guests on. We've done everything that we can. And then to see the interview the other night, if I could have crawled through the TV, and what I wanted to do tonight is bring on a law enforcement perspective. So I brought on FBI, Secret Service, regular law enforcement, myself, and we talked about this interview. It was a sham. It was, I used the old style marionette puppet thing, and there's Urien, and he's pulling Greta's strings, and she's just a dancing. She must have had that check in her hand, or that license in her hand, to talk to him. This is just unbelievable.
I mean, Dana, I have to, God, I mean, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I understand there's a lot of people coming from a lot of different angles, because trust me, I got a lot of different emails.
Oh, I bet, yep.
And I understand the people who say that any form of PR on this case is a good thing.
Yep.
However, I will say to those people...
Not this one.
Bullshit PR
yep.
is not a good thing when it only basically comes to November sweeps. Nobody liked the fact that Dr. Phil investigated this case with one of our dearly departed friends, trying to get Deepak to admit complicity in what happened to Natalie, and then to later have a TV show that talked about sex slave.
Yeah.
I can remember back then, and I will remind all those people how pissed off they were at Dr. Phil for bringing up that whole nonsense, garbage bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Now Greta does the same thing probably 2 years later. If you hand a dollar in front of a liar, they're going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
And what Joran Vandersloot did was typical. It isn't a shocker.
Yep.
The guy, hard up for cash, calls up somebody he knows will take the bait and paid the money. And it's kind of like what I think you said earlier tonight, and I will say also, I mean, I've done talk shows with Steve Cohen, who, you know what, tonight, I really respected the fact of what he had to say.
Yep.
Being now that he's out of probably a lot of the obligations that he once had, he was able to speak a little bit of the truth, and he gave his opinion, and I kind of applaud him for that. Never in a million years, Dana, would I have ever thought that I would have ever agreed with Joe Tacopino.
In the same way.
Kind of disgusts me a little bit tonight, and I kind of have that acid reflux in my throat saying that.
Yeah. Me too.
I do.
Yep.
And when he made the comments, as much as, I mean, I agreed with maybe 10% of what he said.
Yep.
Because the rest of it was more cover-up bullshit nonsense.
Yep.
How does somebody who wants to break the case wide open, I mean, it did come as a shocker to me that this all this interview took place in midsummer.
Right.
That we didn't know the first night, and we found it out the second night, and frankly, I was a little taken aback by that.
Yep. Yeah, it's low class. I agree with you. I had to swallow a half a bottle of Tums myself when I thought about Tacopina and me agreeing with a little bit what he said. Her to sit on that long, not take it to law enforcement, not do anything with it. She thinks that she's Dick Tracy. She thinks that she's the FBI. She can't prosecute a case. In fact, what she did, in my opinion, if this case ever does go to trial, and I hope it does, she has just aired another contradiction of this guy. And it's not going to go anywhere. The truth, if Joran Vandersloot is capable of telling it, was told with Patrick while they were driving around in that car, or parts of it, in my opinion.
I mean, Dana, we know damn well that that Hans Moos and a Rubin prosecution has absolutely no interest in prosecuting this crime.
You're right.
We know that because
yep.
what happened with the Peter DeVries secret taping and... with Patrick, you know, you don't get an admission from somebody when they have no idea they're being videotaped or recorded, and then suddenly say, oh, well, that contradicts what they originally said, so therefore they must be lying. I mean, give me a break. I mean, you're in law enforcement, and I've been covering this stuff for far too long to ever know that anybody is actually going to admit the truth and confess this isn't Perry Mason. I mean, it does make me speechless as the stupidity of most of this stuff. However, for someone to be saying something when they have no idea they're being videotaped, I don't care what they say, they had no idea that was going on. And then all of a sudden, supposedly they're telling the truth when they know they're being videotaped and paid for, oh, what is it called? Licensing of a video chip.
Yeah, right.
No, no, that's called the payoff.
Yeah, exactly.
Licensing of a video chip, somehow that's the truth, and somehow the truth was back 2 years ago when Joran came to the United States and did an interview with Greta, of which she was inclined to believe him. I mean, come on. I have personal connections with this case, obviously.
Yep.
I had personal dealings with many of these players in Aruba before Natalie Holloway's name was ever named. My family knows the Cruz family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost ashamed to say it. However, if that is the case. I know Beth. I know the pain, the anguish that this woman has been through. And we talked a little bit about this this interview that Greta did prior to it airing. And I had promised not to say anything about it to Beth. She didn't really truly want to completely talk about it, and I understand why.
Sure, I do too.
It's extremely difficult to deal with these kinds of situations when it's just a merry-go-round. It is sad that this is the nonsense, because your first guest, Clinton Van Zandt, I can remember way back when Dr. Phil pulled his crap of sex trade nonsense.
Yep.
He took Beth aside and said, "Beth, this is what he's going to do. Please, please deal. Please don't." You know, he tried to preempt the situation.
Sure. Yep.
And now, 2 years later, we're getting the same crap.
Yep.
Now, is that to say that Joran van der Sloot did not say some truths along the way?
Yep.
Of course he did.
Sure he did.
Sociopath does.
Yep.
I mean, you know more than anybody when questioning and interrogating a suspect. You know, there's little truth in everything that somebody says.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was there a bag of money? Yeah, probably was.
Yep.
Probably was going the other direction to get rid of the body.
Yep.
Was, you know, the story, I haven't even been able, because there have been so many holes in the story per sentence, to even wrap my hands around this, to even be able to contradict everything that he said. That's how many lies there were. In, I mean, it just boggles the mind.
You know, it's so disgusting. I think Art Wood was talking about, you know, it's Thanksgiving and all that. But Thanksgiving aside, it's so disgusting to have the family have to see this, to know that they sat on it for all this period of time. And I think, I can't quote Beth, but I believe that she said on the show that she still believes that the DeVries account is probably the most accurate and that Natalie is no longer with us. But it all goes to, and I know for a fact that the Scared Monkeys covered this story probably better than anyone the whole time, and there were things that you sat on that you didn't release that you could have very easily released and gone to that type of reporting. You have to wonder, when it comes down to ratings versus what's actually right and moral, how do you draw the line, Red?
It kind of shows the difference, Dana, between what the media has become and what the internet has become. There is a reason why there was a poll taken, and the majority of people out there, whether they're following crime stories, whether they're following politics, whether they're following the weather, the internet is now the number one source of people's news, and it's not newspapers, it's not TV, and it's not magazines. There is a reason for it, and it's credibility. The internet is not driven. And when I say the internet, I'm not referring to media internet sites. I'm referring to internet sites. And that is those bloggers who have been blasted by the mainstream media in the past for supposedly putting up anything, writing anything. Does that happen in some cases? Sure it does.
Yep.
Are there responsible people out there who try to do the best that they can and source what they can and do investigative journalism as they can? There certainly are. And it's not on cable news. It is unbelievable that, like I said, I was taken aback. I was truly, truly taken aback by the fact that this supposed news was sat on as long as it was.
Yep.
And I had a long conversation with Beth, who asked me to watch it and give her my opinion of the situation, because she trusted my opinion. And it is unbelievable that this is what it came to. And what I would say, Dana, because I know you've been following this case since 2005, I mean, lately we've been following the Kaylee Anthony case. Isn't it amazing that both cases so parallel each other?
Mm-hmm.
Because they both have suspects who lie through their teeth.
Yep.
At any given moment, they come up with a different story to suit their own purpose. And the families that back these lying suspects will do so to their grave.
Yeah.
And it is, I have never seen two cases that have so paralleled each other. And the only difference between the two cases is the fact that law enforcement in Orlando, Florida should be commended for their work that they do, that they want to find this little girl. And in Aruba, call it what you want, it's either corruption or incompetence, and in either case, neither one's an excuse.
Absolutely. Thank you, Red. I appreciate it.
Dana, you take care and have a... Do you guys do Thanksgiving up in Canada?
You know, we could do a show just on that.
I'm Canadian ignorant.
Yeah, I know. We've already done it, and you guys have your Thanksgiving after. I don't know, but actually, I'm going to be in the United States for Thanksgiving, so I get turkey twice.
Well, there you go. You benefit from it, and you guys have a great holiday.
Okay, thank you, my friend.
I will talk to you later.
Talk soon. Bye-bye. All right, that's it. That's our analysis of the Joran van der Sloot, Greta Van Susteren interview. Are we wrong? I don't think so. Greta, you need to stand up and comment on this, because what happened just wasn't right. Put your heart where your mouth is, because I know your heart's in the right place, but sometimes your mouth is more interested in ratings. That's it. That's tonight's show. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. You can listen to replays of past shows, daily commentaries, make comments, and of course listen to the show live. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.